Roger Rulvik. First of all, thank you so much for joining us here on the Emerging Excellence Podcast. An absolute pleasure to have you with us. For those who are unfamiliar with Roger, you currently work with Oracle and in terms of helping lead their expansion in the technology space in the construction and infrastructure efforts. And you also have an illustrious background as a consultant in terms of digitization technologies. Roger, before I either over-amplify or under-merit your capabilities and expertise, I'd love you perhaps take over on the introduction side of things and just give people a bit of an insight to your expertise and your experience in this sector.
Yeah, thanks for that, Michael. So maybe an unconventional background. I originally studied facilities management back in the Netherlands where I grew up. Right. And out of that, kind of got into consultancy. Always knew when I was a student, I wanted to become a consultant, management consultant in that space, because I didn't think there was many people doing that. Didn't think I had that opportunity straight out of university, but I did. Moved to the UK, spent 8 years there providing that kind of advisory. As a result of that, ended up in PPP advisory, public-private partnerships. Because of that role, you ended up in project management advisory as well. The PPP eventually got me to come to Australia when we still did PPP projects in Australia. And from there, we just built out over the years. So that was late 2008. Time progressed. BIM started to become involved. Technology in those spaces. I had clients that I was advising as a management consultant ask me questions like, hey, what are we doing with this BIM? We're building this new building. You're the facilities management advisor. They're talking about we need FM advice in this development of the BIM. In project management, hey, the architects are talking about using a BIM. So you get involved in all those kind of conversations. And eventually that led to me thinking, well, there must be something I can do in this space more than just the ad hoc advisory around right. BIM advisory and technology in that space. Went out through industry contacts, got in contact with people at Oracle, asked them the question, said, am I mad? Is there something there or not? I luckily got confirmed that I wasn't quite as mad as I thought I was, that there was something there. Long story short, eventually got introduced to a gentleman who also works for Oracle based out of the US, who happened to be visiting in Australia. Had a great chat with him, and that was just about 5 years ago now. And here we are working at Oracle in construction engineering side of the business, which is part of the infrastructure industries team within Oracle, advising customers around digital transformation in right. that space. So that's where I am. Do that throughout Asia Pacific generally, but based on my background as a management consultant and the asset and facilities management expertise that I got, sometimes that also spills over into some of our other regions, depending on the opportunity and the accounts that are there. And then some kind of ancillary kind of work that sits around that with writing thought leadership pieces and things like that. Yeah,
that's cool. Fantastic.
Kind of my background.
Awesome. Roger, I think you're very well placed to talk on this topic. What I'm most interested to touch on is about technology in infrastructure. I think you read, if you look at what's happening in the space, this incredible prevalence of AI. It's really coming to its fore in terms of open AI in terms of always announcing some sort of new fandangled product. Google are doing the same. Oracle, no doubt, have their own. And then in terms of the construction space, it's a very traditional sector, though. And I always think that's very interesting. You've got a technology sector which is charging ahead exponentially, whereas construction can't necessarily work on the same time frame or kind of approach. So just tell me from your perspective, what are some of the, how is the construction sector adopting technology more broadly? What are the kind of biggest trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, so let me just take one step back, right? Construction is always labeled as a laggard in the adoption of technology. And you could argue that we aren't. In construction and engineering, we use and adopt technology a lot. The trap I see most organizations fall into is adopting lots of point solutions. So finding a piece of technology that gets introduced to them somehow that does one or two things really well. And I don't want to take anything away from those kind of, let's call them smaller software vendors or technology vendors. They are very good and very niche there. What we then see in construction is, Yes, they will adopt these kind of things, maybe not wholesale. There isn't a standard that says you must build a building using these tools. So everybody has free choice. Everybody chooses their own little favorites, but they are not necessarily connected. So there's no step change necessarily that they therefore can be made, because all this knowledge, data, information is sitting in these siloed proprietary systems that aren't necessarily connected. And in my view, that is what's causing the perceived laggard status of construction engineering. Not because there's no construction, no technology in that industry. There's loads of technology industry. You can go to any of the conferences that I've been to over the last couple of weeks, and of all the exhibitors, of all the conversations they're having, 80-90% is technology focused in one way or another. So it is there. We're just not necessarily very good at maybe being holistic about how we do that as organizations. And maybe that is a result of our industry being a bit more traditionalist or based on trades that have been around for millennia. Yeah, digging holes is what we've been doing. We've been doing that for millennia. Yes, the machine that we used has changed from scraping with pieces of rock down to the latest and greatest diggers that you can buy, but you still build a building fundamentally the same way. You lay foundation, you put some walls on it, you put a roof on it, and hey presto, you have a building. So that, which is a very unchanged, proven method of for us building something versus all this technology advances, they don't necessarily match. And because of that, we look at individual problems rather as it as a holistic kind of issue.
Interesting. I guess what you're saying then is the laggard label is not really warranted given the progresses that have been made. So let's just speak to that more briefly. And I don't know if you can provide much of a global view or perhaps just across Asia at this point. Who would you say is Australia very much at the leading edge when it comes to adopting technology in construction? Or is there a country or an area which really stands out to you in terms of this space, which are trying to really find a cutting edge or are doing a great job of that holistic approach?
So now we're talking about construction industry at a country level, which is a maybe a tricky one to answer in that we also are dominated in global construction by some large conglomerate firms that obviously operate in a certain way across the world because that's what made them so successful. But if I look at it at a country level, I consider Australia certainly one of the front runners, not maybe the front runner, but then if you ask me who is the front runner, I'm not sure who to pick. It's somewhere between Australia. Singapore is very much embracing and looking how to embrace more technology. UK is definitely doing that. I don't know about the individual countries in Europe, but I imagine because the European Union and Europe itself is looking at that, even from EU legislation and everything around that. So there are countries there that are leading. You can name the big and advanced economies in Europe, but that's Germany, France, Netherlands, Spain, maybe to a lesser extent. But there's certainly country industries, construction industries that are advancing. I don't necessarily put the US in that. Maybe that's a point of contention with a lot of people, but I think US is typically first about what other countries are doing and then decides whether they're going to they jump on a bandwagon quick but not first. Does that make sense? Kind of thing. So who is the leader? Don't know. Is there a lot of money being spent in lots of places? Yes. Are those places adopting technology? You only have to look at places like the Middle East right at the moment where there's lots of construction happening. Technology is definitely a feature in there. So are they now leading the world because they're spending a lot of money? Is it India because they're spending large portions of it? Is it China? Because if you base it on the volume of or the size of the construction market and therefore assume that there is a portion of that is technology, then it has to go to China, but just because it's so big in what they spend. So I don't know exactly how to answer that question. So I'm not trying to cop out of an answer here, but it's how I see it. But from a pure education perspective, corporate willingness to explore, maybe success, legislation that supports it. I would definitely put in the top countries like Australia, Singapore, UK, some of the bigger economies in Europe. And then as a secondary kind of layer, you get US, Canada, maybe, yeah, Canada, I'd say put in that second layer, New Zealand, for example. So,
Interesting.
yeah, I'm not sure if that exactly answers the question or the answers that you're looking for, but that's how I view that.
I was mainly, to be clear, I wasn't necessarily looking for a specific answer. I think what I was interested by is that obviously we've got significant upwards pressure here on wages in terms of the Australian context. And that's probably true of many developed nations in terms of in terms of this inflationary environment. We've seen building costs skyrocket, etc. I guess I was curious as to what is happening. Certainly, it's a bit myopic here in terms of my approach or my understanding of the construction space is very Australia-centric currently. Just in terms of Singapore, is it in terms of what's driving that progression, that technology adoption? I would imagine a very different market in many regards to the Australian context. But what are the similarities, or what is it? Is it more of a just a political appetite to adopt technology, or is it more of a cultural piece? What do you think is driving, let's say, Australia, Singapore in terms of that? Is it different drivers or the same?
Oh, look, Singapore's got the advantage of being a developed nation on a very small footprint.
Yeah.
And that, I know I'm not the best person to make judgment or provide an opinion on the Singaporean culture in that. But I imagine that in itself, those restrictions of so many people packed in such a small space has always required Singaporeans to maybe think outside the box, look at advances, look at how do we go up instead of along in terms of
Yeah.
building things. Early high rise was explored in that kind of region because of where it is and the pressures within that. So, to me, I see that a little bit as the driving force behind it. Is that like a cultural, ingrained cultural kind of attitude within the Singapore leadership? And I think that's both in business as well in government, as in there is that kind of maybe more entrepreneurial spirit, or that was born out of pure necessity on their part. And maybe that's the same in Australia, but completely the opposite end of the scale. We've always had to fight the elements and the vastness of this continent and the disconnect, if you like, between the major cities and the vast emptiness almost that sits between those major cities. That means we also had that kind of adventurous kind of spirit that we needed to. What allows us, what can we do? How can we still create the lifestyle, the infrastructure to be a prosperous country with these kind of restrictions? So even though our restrictions or our challenges are very different than Singapore, it may be, and I said I'm not a person who could comment on country cultures, but maybe that's some kind of similarities within that kind of attitude, both from organizations and the people who run the organizations, as well as the people that are in government and set the policies there.
So I think what you said makes a lot of sense. You've just come back from the Future of Construction conference held in Brisbane recently, and I'm interested to understand what did you find was the kind of conversation happening in the room, the people you were interacting with, the executives you're meeting. What are business leaders thinking about in terms of the future and in terms of the technology? How does that kind of, what are you seeing in terms of being on the other side of that as a vendor?
It's an interesting one because it was quite a mix between maybe the speaker's interpretation of the future of construction. And I don't want to take anything away from anybody who stood on a stage there and gave a presentation or speech or keynote of some sort, because firstly, you're a brave person for doing that,
Takes courage, hey?
and secondly, we need people like more people to do that so we can all learn from these kind of things. Having said that, there was a lot of conversation. No, there was, to me, two distinct discussions that I would put the two the, all the conversations in. One is We've had this problem in the past, and we found a technology solution to solve that, and we have now solved it. Let us tell you how that story went, roughly. Then the other one, which was less on stage but more in the corridors and the networking space, was like, what's next kind of conversation. And to me, that was an interesting dynamic on the banner future of construction, where the majority of the on-stage talks, at least the ones that I listened to, seem to fall in the first bucket, as in we had this problem, or we've seen this problem, we found a solution to overcome that. Not much that I saw on stage that was actually, hey, we are here, let's draw this line in the sand. What does construction look like in 2 years' time, or should look like, or in 5 years or 10 years' time? But those kind of conversations had, see, I had more of those kind of conversations outside the official sessions and more with the exhibitors and people coming to visit our stand there as well. It's what was that at the Future Construction. The types of conversations are very broad. People are looking at lots of angles, I suppose, that the future of construction could go in. And it varies very much from human-centric to technology centric to modern methods for construction, new technology, technology advances in more environment friendly concrete or light, more lightweight. So there's kind of very different kind of topics that were covered in that sense.
Can you just, in terms of the future piece, because it sounds like the much of the conference was all about historically, problem solved now, we're all good. What do you think they should be talking about, perhaps, or what do you think more people should have been focused on in terms of the future piece, or perhaps what's even your take on what's coming?
You touched on two things already that I don't think we've solved very well yet, or certainly not even talked about that much, is the skill shortages or even labor shortages. Let's put those in the same bucket. We have a labor shortage because we don't have enough people with the right skills doing available to do what needs to be done, and the rising cost of materials. How you solve that with technology, that's an interesting conversation to have. I don't necessarily have the answer that I can talk about how I think technology may be able to alleviate some of that, but we also have to always bear in mind that any change and in a business and operation is a combination between process, people, and technology. So I'm only coming from one of the three angles in that, and I don't haven't had many or maybe even any conversation about how does do the processes need to change that we adopt to maybe ease some of those pressures of labor shortages or skill shortages and rising costs of supply chain. I don't know, but yeah, to me the biggest thing that I think we have to talk about is that, and then obviously we have to combine that with the ongoing discussion about what does that mean for the climate? But where are we going with all of this? Are we going in the right direction to create a built environment that can be maintained and operated by future generations without having a huge impact on the environment around it? I don't know, but those, to me, if I was to pick topics, those are the three key themes that I would choose: skills and labor shortages, rising material cost, and the environment impact.
I'm curious on those because that those two in particular, so the first two, people and actual product or cost of product, should we say, or cost of materials, I would say they're probably the least you can impact with technology in some capacity, at least in the construction space. Is that not, would you vary from that, or am I looking at it in a different way?
The impact maybe from a technology perspective may be a long bow for some people, but the way I see it is if we have used technology to make people more productive, more efficient, less waste, less time and energy on things that maybe could be automated or should be automated, or maybe remove processes that are laborious and tedious. Because we now have technology that actually, if we were to have a blank piece of paper, we would not design the process the way it is at the moment. So maybe, and that's where I have or like to have more of a discussion around technology. How do we use technology better rather than just saying we have the capability to take this little bit of the process and maybe automate it? It's like, why does the process exist in the first place? Why do we need to go through these steps? And could we get rid of a number of those steps in that process because we now have tools available that can just negate that, not replace it, but completely negate those processes. And material
Interesting.
cost is the same. That's the waste. Yeah, there's a lot of waste. We can't necessarily affect production through using technology unless you're going to start talking about how does technology impact the whole like manufacturing process and the whole economy. And let's not go open that can of worms because I'm not skilled enough to have that conversation. But it's if you we can design much better, we
Yeah.
can try much better, we can look at these newer technologies as in material technologies and use that. We can try and test them quite safely in a technology supported virtual environment
Yeah.
that will allow us to be more efficient in materials, less wasteful with materials. And yes, technology can support that. That doesn't make the material prices go down, but it does make the amount of material that you need to buy
Yeah.
go down, or the amount of dollars that you're basically throwing in the skip outside the front of your construction site.
So tell me if I've got this right, Roger. It sounds like you've got, let's say, construction professionals, let's say you've got executives who've got a burning fire of a problem in their company right now. And I guess they're coming to you because of the burning fire, whatever that might be. But you're saying, let's just take a step, let's zoom out, let's look more holistically about how you're doing things such that that never happens in the first place. Because we can treat the problem. It's a bit, it's medical, right? It's a drug versus an exercise program. They can treat the problem, as it were, in different ways. One's more acute, one deals with your hand hurts, whereas walking 5Ks a day might actually help circulation so you don't have a hurt, painful hand in the first place. And I guess that is that kind of what you're alluding to in terms of technology adoption and how people may be thinking about it right now?
It's definitely how people and organizations should think about it more.
Right.
We are still, there's two things that happen. I mean, this is human nature. Yeah. There's a fire in front of you. You want to put the fire out. Yeah. Come hell or high water, you got to put that out. So you're reacting to that. The other thing is, we love to be seduced by the latest and greatest and the most shiniest and bells and whistles. Hey, you have. That's why we always rush out the shop where, as soon as Apple makes a new announcement about the new product, everybody goes and buys it. When Samsung goes and has their latest flip phone come out, everybody goes and runs and buys it because we are seduced by that. We don't need a new phone. I don't think I ever needed a new phone the last time I got a new phone, but it's just because of the way it is. Yeah. So those two things combined means that we as human beings, and therefore the decision makers and the people within the business, don't necessarily I was going to say have the ability. No, they have the ability, but maybe not the focus or the time or whatever to go, actually, what is happening here? And yes, that is my job. Yeah, that's what I do with these with organizations and our customers is ask that question. It's like, why this? Why now? And that doesn't mean I'm going to sit there dragging my heels if there's a fire that needs to be put out. Let's go and put out fire. But yeah, we need to look at it maybe sometimes a bit more holistically. And you don't want to make a decision now that you're going to regret in 12 months' time.
I feel like that with technology, sometimes it's happening so quickly. It's often the question maybe is when's the right time to buy? When's the right time to make the decision? Because, AI, and I'm just thinking about how AI might help a site engineer as an example. I want to move into how we should be better equipping up and coming leaders, because that given that's our focus here at We Aspire. I guess from if you're an executive, it's a tricky decision to make. When's the right time to invest? Do you adopt the American approach of watch other people and then choose and then jump on the bandwagon, or do you try and be bleeding edge or cutting edge or whatever you might say? So it's from that piece. What if you had a, let's say, a CTO at a construction firm in front of you, what would be your counsel to them in terms of they're trying to weigh up that decision?
There's a couple of things that play in that. So if I go back to how do we equip people in the future for more technology, there's not one place in a person's journey where you do that throughout the journey. So that should start at least at university, maybe beforehand. I don't know. I'm not an education specialist, but it starts there. And it's a continuous thing. Technology is not going to stand still. So, do we need to train people in a particular piece of technology? Maybe not. Maybe we need to train people in the way they, their attitude towards new things, their attitude towards considering technologies. And that brings back into the point is at what point do you make the decision? To me, that is a commercial business decision that you got to make. We have the opportunity with this technology to make these changes. How much of these changes, how much is that hurting us at the moment? Can we quantify that? And therefore, you then start building a business case. And the business case doesn't always have to be there in dollars, yeah? Or direct dollars in terms of your construction. It could be indirect dollars or qualitative or image and reputation or risk reduction. There's different ways of quantifying making that decision. So the safety of our staff will go up, or we're saving 10%. And both are equal, potentially of equal value. Maybe the saving of people's lives is higher value than saving 10% in dollars. It's how do you do that? And that gets over one of the big problems that I see a lot of people. Or traps, maybe that I see organizations fall into is that, well, we're going to automate or we're going to digitize because we can rather than because we should. Just because you can automate and digitize something doesn't mean you have to do that, at least not right now. You only need to do it right now if it actually makes sense from a justification, investment justification perspective, however you want to quantify that. And that's, I think that's very important to consider in that argument. So the two things in answer to your question is the bringing people on board is a continuous journey. When do you make the decision to make to adopt the technology? It has to be, certainly for businesses, it has to be a commercial one. But commercial can be measured in different ways. And if you don't, I can guarantee you'll struggle to attract new workforce of the future because they are like,
Interesting. Talking about the future workforce, I think that's something which we're really interested in. It's a very, I think the sector is going through some big changes. I think it's having to find efficiencies in terms of the cost of people these days, the cost of materials. Efficiency is a really strong driver. We're trying to, navigate some really tricky. There was a great thing at the Sydney Build where I met you in terms of talking about. We've dialed up safety has become it's the number one for a lot of firms these days and rightly as it should be, but the question sometimes is that can often get in the way of progress or kind of the how do you juggle that balance? Not to say we should be causing harm to others, but how safe is safe enough? And that's what's quite an interesting question. So when it comes to the future workforce, what would your advice be to a 26-year-old who's an engineer at the moment, they're coming up, they've got aspirations to move into executive style or maybe senior leadership. How would they be best prepared or best preparing from a technology perspective or understanding the technology of the future?
it's a good question because I think there's two parts to it. And I think particularly in construction engineering, we have to make a separation between manual labor skills. Yeah, we need, I hate to use the word blue collar, but let's go with it because it's probably easiest to distinguish between that. Is we need those people. We still need those people. Do we need a truck driver forever? Probably not. At some point, we may have a robot or the truck itself is automated. But for the time being, we certainly need the drivers of the cranes, the trucks, the forklifts, everything like that. We do need the people who know how to put formwork together, who know how to build scaffolding and all that kind of stuff. It's still, scaffolding still gets designed by an engineer somewhere, but somebody's got to put the damn thing up. Yeah. And we do not yet live in a society where all manual labor is done by robots. So you have to, and I don't know what that trajectory is, but I don't personally, I don't think that is going to change all that dramatically for a generation at least.
Yeah.
For a whole variety of reasons, being that union, being that, hey, we don't really have an alternative for these people. What will we do with them? So there's this natural
Yeah.
hesitation
Big
in that
drivers
sense.
there.
So
Yeah.
we have, that's the technicians, let's call them that. The technician, people with skills that we're not replacing with technology just yet. Then we have, I'm going back to the old white collar, blue collar, but the white collar worker sitting in the office wanting to move through. How do you do that? And I think that varies very much about the role that you've got.
Yeah.
AI is here and it's not going to go away. It's a scary and exciting prospect at the same time. So my first advice is learn about that. What is it? How do you use it? I mean, I know enough to know that I don't know enough, I suppose, but it's, I don't know. I'm assuming you've used some kind of large language model, generative AI kind of thing,
Certainly.
and you may or may not have had very mixed results with the question that you ask or the information that you put in. So, how do you get better at that? How do you actually make that the best use of that? And that requires you to learn about that. But
Yeah.
that, again, is a single type of technology, albeit a very popular one at the moment. So if you want to get ahead, I say it's more a case of learning or adopting an attitude of challenge all of the time. It's not so much about the skill. There's always people, we will always need people with skills, but then we're going back into that technical skill kind of nature. And will there be, will developers no longer exist because we're going to have an AI who's going to do all our coding for us? Maybe one day, but maybe there's still some human oversight that always is going to be required for that. So to me, the power is for future generations in the workforce is about challenge. Actually have the courage to challenge what in front of you. Why is something being done in a way? And could we do different? Because it's very hard for a person who's in the middle of a process and have been doing that very for a long time to see that there's other things. So there's two things to do that is one is the attitude and the other is look around, look up and look around and read stuff and go on whatever media platform you prefer to learn about things and learn about how what technologies are out there. Don't take the first answer you're going to get for as truth, but do your research, learn about that kind of stuff. Learn about AI. That's what I'm going to say. Learn about AI. I'm doing it personally myself now. I feel I need to know more about AI, even though I work for a company, a big technology company in Oracle. It's I don't know enough to see how I can use it and how I can give myself my job security for the next 20 years or whatever long I decide I want to carry on working for, because it's here and it's immediate. Its effect is immediate and instant. Whenever somebody develops something and an AI, it's available now
Deployable, I mean,
around the world.
yeah, it's
And
crazy. It's incredible.
we as human beings have never experienced that. We've
Yeah.
always had this problem that, not problem, this luxury of time. If somebody made an invention somewhere in the world, there was a long between making that invention and actually it becoming adopted by everybody else around the world, there's a long period of time. AI and digital advance, anything that happens on the internet, there is zero delay. So that old bell curve of the early adopters and early majority, late majority, that was always over a period of time. I think the bell curve still exists. The people still
Certainly.
exist, but the time frame is so much vastly reduced. And that's a new problem that I'm not sure we as society have tackled.
It's a great point. I think, and I love that point. I think that a big part of what we train in terms of becoming a leader, and if you look at more holistically in terms of key traits, is curiosity. Having the curiosity about and being curious enough to ask what you said there, Roger, is perfect in terms of how could I do this? Is it why do we do it this way? What's the alternative? And I think if you can as a future leader or as an emerging leader, start to cultivate that mindset of what could we do? How does this work? I think that curiosity is very powerful and speaks to what you're talking about. Because if you're not curious about technology or what's happening in this space, then yeah, you're going to get left behind because of the speed of progress. But it's also it's how you equip yourself and keep up to date ultimately.
And how you make a living as a human being. Yeah. And I don't think it's actually limited to construction engineering as
I
an
agree.
industry. Yeah. I know there's lots of stories out there, people in the arts going, AI can create an artwork now. That's great. But equally,
Yeah.
an AI can't yet pick up an actual physical brush and make a skilled painting. But as an artist, where you're going to focus your effort, and I don't think you have the luxury anymore to pick one. I think you have to pick all of it and learn, how do I as an individual make art with AI? How do I use AI, the technology, to get more of my art out to more people? And
Yeah.
how do I keep honing my skills of holding a paintbrush and creating that masterpiece of. There is some real skill involved in that, and that can't be replaced by a robot or an AI or something like that. It's the same. So, if that's the artist, the same goes for construction and engineering. What is my skill? What are the things I'm going to hone in on? I'm going to go hone in on being very good at certain things, but I underpin all of that with what you call curiosity, or what I call the challenge kind of attitude. Just challenge it and ask the questions. Nobody's going to shoot you down for asking the question, but you need to ask a question from a point of knowledge, a point of reference, and point of context that makes sense. And maybe that's where the skill is. Maybe that's what we need to teach the future generation, is to learn how to do that. You can ask a question to an executive like, why do I have to fill in this form? You get one of those, because the second time is, that's our policy, you're just going to have to do it. But if you ask the question from another context, as, hey, why do I have to go through this process, which seems time consuming, and I'm losing time, I'm not productive, and I think there is a solution that can be faster, why can we can I look at that? That's a different kind of, it's the same question, but, or the same, you're trying to get to the same point with the question, but you're asking it in a more intelligent, more constructive way. You understand the context within that. You've already looked at that. There's no point somebody telling you need to fill this form because it's compliant with health and safety. You could have found, you could have known that. Yeah, it's those kind of things that I think where we need to train people, not just blindly go and ask why or challenge people or challenge the status quo, but do that from a learned research perspective.
Roger, I think it's a beautiful way to sum up this conversation. So, first of all, massive thank you for taking the time out of your day to speak with us and provide your perspective. I think you've got a really interesting view, and the fact that you work with so many different organizations at Oracle with different types of technology solutions that you offer. Just the last question for you, what's the best way for people to reach out to you if they've got a follow-on question or something like that?
LinkedIn is available, so I don't know if the name is on or going to be on screen, but I assume it is at some point. So that you can always reach me out through LinkedIn, or otherwise it's firstname.surname@oracle.com on the email. So yeah, you can just
Nice
go
meeting.
there, or just have a chat when you see me out and about at events or whatever, like you and I did in
Yeah,
Sydney.
super. Again, thanks again for being so open to come on here, and I'm sure there's some real nuggets in there for a lot of people, whether you're at the construction leader or you're a up and comer, there's some real gold in there. So thank you, Roger.
Thanks for having me.